Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.
Welcome to Fried, the Burnout Podcast, Season 5. The goal of each Fried episode, whether you're an entrepreneur, parent, employee, or otherwise defined, is to create moments of spontaneous healing by ensuring that you feel seen, heard, connected to others, and validated. By doing this, Fried fulfills its mission to kill the shame, blame, and judgment associated with burning out, and Fried adds to its original goal of creating a movement to hashtag end burnout culture. Should you need a coach, Fried coaches are standing by to help guide you through recovery. Book a call anytime by visiting the links in the show notes. Should you need a speaker, you can hire me, Kate, and you can rest assured that your people will have fun and learn about burnout at the same time. In the meantime, I'm ready to give you this week's episode, which will help you heal just a little bit more, starting now. Hello, Fried fans, and welcome back to another episode of Fried the Burnout Podcast. Today, we are talking to my friend Nicole Khalil, who has a new book out. Woohoo! Nicole, remind me of the title of your book.
Validation is for Parking.
How hysterical is that? So before we even get into it, I want you to go grab it right away. And if you don't grab it right away, don't fret. It will be in the show notes so that you can get it immediately after, because I know once you hear Nicole and her story today, you're going to want it. So Nicole's passion for eliminating gender expectations and redefining quote unquote women's work is both what keeps her up at night and what gets her up in the morning. Well, that and an abundant amount of coffee. An in-demand speaker, leadership strategist, respected coach, and host of This Is Women's Work podcast, her stalker-like obsession with confidence sets her apart from the constant stream of experts telling us to be confident. She actually tells you how to build it and gives actionable tools, not just stories, to become confident. A fugitive of the C-suite at a Fortune 100 company, she has coached hundreds of women in business, which has given her insight as to what structurally, systemically, and socially is and isn't serving women and leaders within an organization. Maintaining some semblance of sanity in her different roles of wife, mother, and business owner successfully is an ongoing challenge. In whatever free time she has, she enjoys reading and wine guzzling, is an avid cheese enthusiast, a hotel snob, and a reluctant Peloton rider. Nicole, welcome to Fried.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so excited to hear your story. We start every Fried the Burnout podcast episode with a burnout story that you would like to share. Anyone is fine. A lot of people that come on here have multiples.
Like, where do I start?
Yeah. Which one do I choose is
like,
very,
today?
Yeah, exactly. Is very frequently the question. So you can choose anyone that happens to come up right now. I have a very deep faith in the conversations that happen in this space. And I have a very deep faith in whatever is coming out for you right now is the thing that people need to hear. So I'm going to step off stage and let you have at it.
All right. I really could choose so many stories, but I think my big burnout story is a professional one. I worked at a Fortune 100 financial planning company for almost 15 years and moved up very quickly in the ranks, worked my face off. You know, I was one of those get in at 7 a.m, don't leave till 9 o'clock at night, go in on the weekends. Because I had something to prove, right? For those of you that don't know, the finances industry is still to this day very male dominated. About 20% of the people who work with clients in finance are women. And at the time I was doing it, it was even less. And then if you look at the leadership ranks, it's fewer and fewer numbers. So the being the only woman in the room was like a daily occurrence for me. And what I did to, at least in my mind, to survive was I really overemphasized any masculine qualities that I have. And I do have quite a few, or that we think of as masculine, very decisive, blunt, you know, don't mind taking risks, want to be in leadership, like all of those things. And so I just really over-rotated and I ended up shoving down, ignoring all the feminine. And over several years, I was so burnt out in that I wasn't even myself anymore. Mm. People would talk about my confidence because I showed up confidently. And it just got to a point where everything looked really good. I was racking up successful professional successes, like left and right. I had a above average spending problem to go with my above average income. I drove the nice car, but it, you know, was really lonely on the weekends waiting for Monday to come because I wasn't putting myself out there. It was just a messy, messy time in my life. And what I came to realize is I didn't know what confidence was. I just knew I didn't have any of it. And I didn't know who I was authentically anymore. And I was hating my work. I was hating the people I was doing it with through no fault of their own, just because I'd put myself in this position where I tried to show up and please everyone else but myself. And I didn't really know what I was doing it for anymore. Yeah. So I can talk a little bit about how I got past it, but that is my burnout story where, you know, after 15 years of doing everything I could to get to a certain promotion, which I finally got. And when I got it, I was excited for about 3 seconds. And then all the fear and doubt and all the stuff that was there before, came streaming back in. And I realized this was not about goals or achievement. This was not about a healthy approach to success. And something had to change.
Yeah. I always have a funny moment in my head when people are like, I hated myself. I hated everybody. I hated everybody I worked with. This is such a burnout thing to me. And I grew up on Wu-Tang. So I don't know about you, but I grew up with the Klan. And whenever I hear that, I think, like, you know, to the tune of cash rules everything around me, I hate everyone around me. Like, this is what happened in my head.
I love it. So my theme song is like, I have 99 problems, but being a bitch ain't one.
yeah, exactly. So this is like, I always think about that as such an extreme sign of where somebody is when you cannot find any joy in being with yourself or being with anyone else. There's a problem.
100%.
There's a problem. There might be a couple of assholes that you just don't like. Cool. I'm okay with that. But if you hate everyone, the problem might not be everyone. And that's really tough. During that time, were you having physical symptoms? Like, were you having any like health things going on during that time?
You know, it's interesting. I have always had a weird fluctuation with weight. Yeah. And I do think that I stored a lot of my emotions, you know, because I didn't feel comfortable communicating them. I didn't feel comfortable sharing them or showing them, especially in my male dominated field, especially the more, you know, I put in air quotes, feminine emotions, like God forbid I should cry or, be dramatic or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I think I stored my emotions in my body and it showed up in weight gain. And, you know, no matter what I did, I couldn't lose it. But I would say the biggest symptom was, I was drinking heavily.
Yeah.
And having lots of regrets, hangovers and all of that. And it was just, I just didn't want to be with myself by myself. And a lot of the events I would go to for my company, you know, all the other guys were drinking heavily and, you know, going out, and I, you know, refused to see how it was different for me. Like my husband actually said at one point, he's like, you should not be drinking the same amount of alcohol as a 200-pound man does. This is just science. This is this isn't like a, you know, me being not a feminist or something.
Were you married when this was all happening?
I wasn't.
Yeah.
No, okay. I was very, very single, painfully so.
Painfully single.
Because I felt the expectation was that I should be married and dating, and all my friends were getting married. And it was interesting. Then I started doing the like embodiment of Sam from Sex and the City, which there's nothing wrong with that character. If that's authentic to you, it wasn't authentic to me, but I was trying to do the, like, who needs a man? I'm going to sleep with people and not care, except that I did.
Yeah.
It was just a messy, messy time all around.
And
fundamentally came down to what you were saying is I just didn't like myself and I didn't know myself.
You can't like yourself if you don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody did a poll on LinkedIn recently and it was like, what is the opposite of burnout was the question he asked. His name is Joey Chandler. And he said, what is the opposite of burnout? And the highest result came back as energized. And the second highest result came back as aligned.
Hmm.
What do you think about that?
Yeah. So when you asked the question, I was like, is she going to ask me? I don't know the answer. A peace came into my mind but I like aligned. For me, it's, I would almost say confident, trusting myself, knowing myself, aligned. I like aligned. That resonates with me.
Yeah. I thought
energized is hard for me because I'm naturally a little bit of a low energy person. I'm a diehard introvert, a homebody. So when I think of energized, I think of like bubbly and outgoing and like, woohoo. And I just don't do that a lot.
I think of energized as sort of the ability to engage with and be excited about your work or your life. But it doesn't have to be excited, like bouncing off the walls, but an ability to focus. You can't focus if you're not energized about something. So, you know, that moment, even introvert, not introvert, before you get on stage, there's that moment, you know, or like 24 hours of a moment of a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of, you know, kind of a mixture of things, but those feelings to me, even though there is some anxiety, those feelings to me are energizing because I know I want to be doing that thing.
Yeah. I love that space of that nervous and excited feeling at the same time, fear and something. I actually think that's the sign I'm up to something big. And that's where all of the best things in my life have come from is that dual feeling. I think, in my work with people who identify mostly as women, I think women far too often are waiting to be ready. They're waiting for the fear and the nervousness to go away and only have excitement and readiness. And I'm like, oh gosh, we're waiting too long. There's so much good that happens in that sort of 50-50 space where like from one second to the next, you're like, what am I doing? And like, oh my God, I'm so excited. I'm doing it. You know?
Yes. Yes. We call this anxited around here.
I like that. Yes. I know that feeling very well and I love it.
We call this anxited. So what is it that you're doing now?
Yeah. So my work boils down to speaking. The book has taken a fair amount of time in the last year and a half. And then I do some coaching work as well. And for me, it's around confidence. My mission is eliminating gender expectations and basically having all of us reconnect to our confidence. Our confidence hasn't gone anywhere. So whether you feel uber confident or not confident or anything in between, our confidence lives inside of us and it's accessible anytime we want. We have just been socialized and received messaging to the contrary pretty much our whole lives. And so I really want to, you know, uncover what I call the confidence con, which is the belief that confidence is going to come to us from some sort of external thing, meaning the person of our dreams, getting the promotion, having perfectly behaved children, making a certain amount of income, having your house be perfect, whatever the case may be. We often operate, or what the number on the scale says, or what size clothes we fit into, we often operate as if confidence is like this weird game of Where's Waldo? Like our confidence is out there with someone or something else, and we just got to find it. It's this false equation of if X happens, then I'll feel confident. And it doesn't work. It never works. The reality is confidence lives inside of us, and confidence in its simplest form is when we trust ourselves, when we choose to trust ourselves. And we all have an inner knowing. We all have an inner voice. We all have purpose. We are all valuable and worthy. And our opportunity is to begin to trust ourselves again.
All right. So let's get into this self-trust, because what I see frequently in the burnt out amongst us is that they've lost the ability to trust themselves because they don't know who they are, what they want, where they're going, when they have to pee. They don't know anything. So how can they, what are they supposed to trust? Like, they get told, listen to your intuition. They're like, I don't know if that's my intuition or last night's hamburger.
Right. Yeah. I often, you know, that inner voice, it's like, which voice am I listening to? The one that has a running to-do list of like, you know, go to the dry cleaner, get it at the grocery store. Don't forget to buy Gorgonzola cheese. Then there's that voice in our head that's like insane. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, what's the difference between blue cheese and Gorgonzola? Is there a difference? Like, why am I thinking about this right now? Right. And then there's what I call head trash. This is the voice inside our minds that says things to us about us that are never kind and very rarely true. It's the voice of often others that we've accumulated through the course of our lives, whether it's bullies,
parents,
bosses, exes, well-intentioned family members and friends.
Or not so well-intentioned.
Or not so well.
Again, some people are just assholes.
Yeah. Co-worker. Yeah. Everybody's contributing, right?
Yeah.
And so we have this head trash, this internal voice that is mean, and it's a bully, and it's constantly in our minds. And then there's that inner voice. And so if you think about it, it is really hard to listen for that, especially when we're out of practice. So, you know, we know things like meditating or, you know, being quiet or asking yourself questions. What do I want? What do I really want? I love your work in this, Kate. What is my resentment telling me about me and what I want and what's important, my values? You know, there are so many things that we can be asking ourselves, but I think priority number one is separating. So not operating with your head trash as if it's your inner knowing. And the best way to distinguish between the two, your head trash is mean. If you would not say what's happening in your mind to somebody you love, if you wouldn't say it to your partner, your best friend, or your child, then it's head trash. Because inner knowing may challenge you. It may say something you don't want to hear, but it will always come from a place of love and kindness. It will be what you would say to your child or to your best friend or to a close coworker. It may not, again, be what you want to hear, but the where it's coming from is the best way to distinguish between the two. And we just need to get quiet and listen for that inner knowing a little bit more. And it's like anything, the more we practice, the easier it gets. And the last thing I'll say is our bully voice, that head trash, is very loud. Our inner knowing is often very quiet. So don't beat yourself up. Don't give yourself head trash about having head trash if you can't hear your inner knowing. Just give yourself some space and some time. It's there, I promise.
I'm creating right now an infographic of, you know, head trash versus inner knowing. Like, that's happening in my mind right now. So that's a note to my podcast producer to make that into this week's infographic.
Oh, I love that. Yay. Okay, good.
But I want to say this sentence once again, which might become the title of this episode. You said, stop interacting with your head trash as if it's your inner knowing. Shit.
Shit. Right. Oh God, it's so painful if you think about how often we're believing the crap in our own minds and like interacting with it as if it's truth with a capital T. It's like I actually even get emotional thinking about it. It's painful. And so many people have contributed to our head trash, ourselves included.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. So I think about it like regular trash. My husband, my child, when we have friends over or a dinner party, other people contribute to the trash, but it's still my responsibility to sift, sort, and discard it every time. And so I have to decide what gets recycled, what gets brought back for another purpose or another use, what gets composted, what can I use for growth? And then what is trash? What do I need to discard and let go of, never to be seen or thought of again? And the last thing I'll tell you that I've learned that from regular trash, it's also true about our head trash. It gets disgusting when it's hot out. And what I mean by that is when you're stressed, overwhelmed, under pressure, your head trash is going to get gross, like mind maggots, right? And you might need to put on gloves and do the whole thing to discard it. But that's where we really have to do that extra work. And if nothing else, if you can do nothing else, name it, call it head trash, call it what it is, so you don't operate with it as if it's some sort of truth or inner knowing.
I really love the trash analogy. It's working for me. I have a lot of pictures in my mind, a lot of interesting things happening in there.
But it is, it's trash. It just gross.
Yeah. I love the idea of what can I compost? Like what's here for growth?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times I think what's missing in the world right now, because of the internet, and I think the internet has done a lot of really wonderful things. It's proven that the more people have access to internet in developing countries, the less health disparities they see in amongst communities. So this is massive. Like it has made a lot of people healthier simply because they have connection and contact to things that they might need. So cool. And everything that we create ends up having a side effect or two, mm-hmm. You know, that's just normal.
Shadow side, right?
A shadow side. That's just normal. It's just normal. And I think people want to always sort of throw out the baby with the bathwater. But one of the things that I see with the internet is we're trying to fit things into Instagram sized squares. And that means that we are aiming for strong sentences that will get people's attention that don't leave space for nuance.
Mm-hmm.
So the message that you just gave requires a lot of nuance and discernment on your part. It's not, you didn't say, throw away your head trash. You said sort, sift,
discard. Right?
Discard. Yeah. That's different. What things need to be kept? What things need to be recycled, what things need to be composted for future growth, what things actually need to be thrown out. And so I think in the world of the internet, the message would just be throw out your head trash, but that's not really the message.
Yeah. And I'll give a couple examples because sometimes people are like, oh, what's the difference? So the reality is you're the decider. You decide what you want to compost, what you want to recycle, what you want to trash. That's the beauty of it all is that it's yours and it's all your decision. So that my examples could easily be something different for someone else. But as an example for a compost, I was told very often that I was too ambitious. And really what I was being told is I was too ambitious for a woman. And I really composted that, use it for growth. Yes, I'm an ambitious woman. I have goals. I have things I want to achieve and accomplish. And there, like that's become a source of pride for me. And it is a big contributor to my success financially, professionally. And so that's an example of taking something that could have been head trash, but I used it for my growth. Another example for recycling is I have a loud voice. And as a child, I was very loud and people would always tell me, yeah, I know you're right. Yeah. That I was too loud and too opinionated.
Too talkative.
And I did what any loud and opinionated person would do. I started a podcast, right? And so I recycled that. I turned it into something that was different in a way that worked for me.
Yeah. We're both podcast hosts and professional speakers.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like top of my class kind of kid, like super nerd. I also got most talkative in my eighth grade class. usually the super nerd doesn't get most talkative, you know, like those things don't really go together, but I got super nerd and most talkative, and I got, God, I didn't have a problem getting straight A's, but I got sent to the principal's office for not being able to shut the hell up sometimes. And now I'm like, you know how much they pay me to not shut up now?
Yeah. Isn't it the best? Great recycle, right?
Yeah.
Thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
But you know, like somebody, I had an ex-boyfriend who told me, you know, I would never find a long-term relationship as long as I was so career oriented. No man ever wants to be with a woman who, you know, blah, blah, blah. Right. That's trash.
Yeah.
That got thrown out and I never interacted with it again, as if it was something worth interacting with. Cause it was just trash.
I want to talk about how trash gets created also, because I have this thing that keeps happening in the back of my head as we go through this conversation. And it's, if you have, well-intentioned or not, parental figures or caretakers as you're growing up, not everybody has, you know, parents, mm-hmm. you have caregivers growing up that said nasty things to you, you might be primed based on that to interpret other people's information to you as trash when it's really compostable or recyclable, mm-hmm. because you assume a malintent and you pile on their comment on top of the trash heap, the land dump that you've kept from your childhood that was never true in the first place, but is stuck in your brain, is in your neural networks, is there. So is there do we just go back to this basic idea of a head trash is mean and inner knowing is not? Like, do we start to sift through that based on that, like, kind of more simple paradox to give us a little bit of structure to deal with it?
Yeah. So, you know, let me start by saying my heart hurts for any child who, you know, grew up where the head trash was being contributed to way too frequently, way too young, because, you know, that is going to be a huge challenge to overcome. You're really going to have to retrain your brain. And I don't say this flippantly. I say this with the most amount of respect that I can. That's where I think therapy is absolutely the place to go. It's necessary. I'm not equipped to help people process through that. And
me either.
There are people who are. And I've gone to therapy many times and I'm a huge advocate. So
same.
I would enlist a professional's support to help you to distinguish and to unravel. But yeah, I think fundamentally, it's and also say every parental figure has contributed to our head trash, even if they were the best in the world mm-hmm. and the most loving. And all of us who are parents are contributing to our child's head trash, whether we like it or not. It's just part of the deal. So we all have things to unpackage and to unravel. I really think in its simplest form, the best way to distinguish is mean bully versus loving kind. And again, loving kind can still be challenging.
Can still be firm.
It can still be firm. Mm. The other thing too, is somebody may say something to you. Somebody else may be the mean bully and you may decide to turn that within yourself into loving kind, something to compost or to recycle. But that's, you know, what we get to do. We get to decide how to react and how to easier said than done, for sure. But it's an important part of trusting ourself is to check in. What do I think? What do I believe? How do I trust myself? And what's really interesting about confidence building is it's done best during the hardest times. It's easy to trust yourself when everything's going to plan.
Yeah.
When everything is working out, when everything's sunshine and rainbows, trusting yourself during that time is not that hard and it feels great and I enjoy those times, but leaning into trusting yourself, true confidence, when things are messy, when they're tough, when they're not going at all to plan, when the, you know what hits the fan, that's where our real opportunity to build confidence lies. So it's easier said than done, like so many things, and requires a ton of practice and also an awareness that it's only ever always a journey.
Yeah.
Nobody arrives to confidence, plants a flag, and is like, whew, I'm done. That was fun. You know, right? So it's not like climbing Mount Everest where you hit the top, and it's an ongoing journey.
Yeah. Like all of them, right? That's such a, that can be really annoying or really freeing depending on where you're at today.
Yes. Well, and I love that you said that because that's how I feel about confidence. A lot of times we have confidence as something we're born with or born without, as opposed to what it is, which is a skill or a choice that we can develop or make anytime we want. And to me, that's freeing.
Yeah.
That's good news. That means no matter where you are on your confidence building journey, you can have more of it. And I love that for us.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your book.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just going to ask
you.
You're
excited.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Okay. Let's do it. I want to talk about your book. And I also want to, like, there's clear neuroscience that says getting positive reinforcement for a job well done actually changes your brain structure and makes you more resilient,
mm-hmm.
makes you more resilient to stress. So I love the title of the book. And the first thing that I think of is like, but there's neuroscience that says validation is important, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah. Like, I call it icing on the confidence cake.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. So yeah, let's get into it, because again, we're at this place where the punchy headline does the work, but there's still nuance in there. So let's get into that nuance a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, compliments, validation, achievements, all the things that I talked about before when I said, if X happens, then I'll feel confident. There's nothing wrong with those things. They feel good. They're helpful. The problem is if we think we need those things to trust ourselves, to be confident, then we've placed our trust in something or someone else's hands and just not confidence anymore. So what I would say is confidence, the confidence cake, is choosing to trust yourself over and over and over and over again. All those other things, validations, compliments, achievement, promotions, perfectly behaved kids, those are icing on the confidence cake. They make it a little sweeter. They make it look better and it's a more beautiful thing. But it's not a necessary ingredient for the cake itself.
Right.
That makes any
sense. I mean, I do love eating icing right out of the
Hey, and I think especially for those of us that identify as women, we have gotten that mixed message over and over again, that our confidence is very closely directed, correlated with how we look.
Yeah.
And that is really damaging. That to me is like the biggest example of the confidence con. You know, if you look a certain way, weigh a certain amount, fit into a certain size, you know, have the certain clothes or whatever, then you'll feel confident. And it's like, ooh, you'll feel attractive. And feeling attractive feels good. Or you might feel successful, and feeling successful feels good. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with wanting to feel attractive or wanting to look successful or any of those things. Where the problem is that we've made it the same as confidence, and it's just not. And that's why we're so confused about trusting ourselves.
Are you using trust and confidence interchangeably?
I pretty much am. Yeah, that's my like simplest way of, is this confidence? Does it help me increase my trust? Does it have anything to do with my trust in myself? If the answer is yes, then it's confidence. If it's not, then it's probably something else. Not bad. And may be connected to me trusting myself, may impact me trusting, may support me, may reinforce me trusting myself. Great. But yeah, I am, because if you go back to the etymology of the word confidence, it is trust, firm, bold trust, faith. In any language, those are the words it ties back to.
Does confidence come from Greek or Latin? Do you know?
Latin, and then went Middle English is my recollection.
I like my mother.
I feel like 90% confident on that.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. I just looked it up, you guys. Confidence, origin Latin, confidere, to have full trust. Latin confidentia, and then confident in late Middle English. Have full trust. It literally means have full trust is where it came from. This is sort of blowing my mind right now.
Me, when I figured that out, when somebody suggested going back to the etymology, I was like, oh my God, we're using the word like it's a catch-all word. We're just throwing out there, and I don't think anybody's like trying to trick us or anything.
No, words evolve with time, and it hasn't evolved when we're talking to somebody else. Like, do I have your confidence is a question about trust. Mm-hmm. Can I trust you with this? That's the same thing. But when we talk about self-confidence, that's not the thing that comes up for me. It might be some people may be out there thinking, yeah, of course, that's what I think of. But this is, I love things like this.
Things me that too. I geek out on it.
Yeah, I geek out on this big time. And this is not one that I've heard before said this way, which I'm such a geek that there's not too many of those. So yeah, you're blowing my mind right now.
Oh my God, I love that so much. I went down a rabbit hole of like looking at everything that had to do with confidence, even like when I talk about a con, like the confidence game or a con artist or a con man, it's trust. Yeah. It's basically getting people to trust you so you could, the word, but having said that, if you go on social media and you hear, you know, people, successful people are attracted talking about
confidence. You can be confident if you do this Peloton exercise for the next. Yeah,
exactly. Now, working out falls in a gray area for me. Mm. If you're working out to, you know, because of some sort of external reason, it's probably not going to impact your confidence. If you're working out for, it will impact your confidence internally because of the trust that it builds in yourself. When you commit to taking care of yourself on a consistent basis, when you say, I'm going to do something, and then you do it, when you push yourself a little bit harder because I trust that I can, when you begin to feel strong within yourself, those things absolutely will. So working out is like one of those where it's like, does working out build your confidence? Yes.
Yeah, it could be in the recycle pile. Yeah, it could be in the recycle pile, could be in the trash pile, depending on what's going on. This is interesting because often on the podcast, I talk about building self-worth, not by focusing on saying things like I am worthy, but by committing to taking care of your basic foundational needs. We're not getting to exercise yet. We're talking about drinking when you're thirsty, eating when you're hungry, resting when you're tired. Yeah, like sleeping at, you know, instead of watching 2 extra hours of Netflix. Not that I'm saying I'm not guilty of that, so don't come at me. Right. And we joke on the podcast a lot. My listeners already know what I'm about to say, but peeing when you have to pee. You know, like not holding your pee so that you can finish one more email, or these really basic tools help to breed self-worth because you start to trust yourself. Like it's the same thing. I didn't think about it like that, but it's the same thing. You're trusting your body's signals and you're responding to them, and your body trusts that you're going to respond to your signals. It's this, again, we're in a closed cycle.
Yeah. It's incredible. In the book, I write 10 ways that I know of that you can build internal trust. And really in its simplest form, I would encourage you to think about how you build trust with another person or how somebody else builds trust with you. That's probably going to give you the best insight into how you build trust with yourself, but certainly keeping your commitments, right?
Yeah.
For a lot of us, that means not overcommitting and being clear.
Wait, slow down. God, these are things that I half my audience's stomachs just twisted. Is we're talking about making and keeping commitment but knowing what your boundaries are around what sort of commitment you can make and keep. Can we talk about that a little bit more?
Oh, yeah. I think we are overcommitters and default yesers, right? And so I think being clear that there are differences between commitments versus I'll do my best versus I'm going to try or I'm going to test something out or a habit or, you know, there's all these different available words, but we often go commitment far too often, far too fast. And what's problematic is most of us do a fairly good job of keeping the commitments we make to other people, but we end up not keeping the commitments we make to ourselves. Either way, you're damaging trust. But obviously, if we're talking about confidence, trusting yourself, you're doing the most amount of damage to your own confidence when you break the commitments you make to yourself. Now, nobody's perfect. Perfectionism is a confidence derailer.
Amen.
So I go through 5 confidence derailers, 5 confidence builders. Perfectionism is the enemy of confidence. So when I say keeping your commitments, I don't mean you're going to keep 100% of your commitments 100% of your time. But I do mean that we keep them more than we don't. And that when we don't, we think about what was the learning opportunity here? Maybe this wasn't a commitment I should have made in the first place. We've got to interact with them differently, but we really want to be keeping the bulk of the commitments we make, especially the ones we make to ourselves, because not doing so is doing damage to our internal trust, our confidence in ourselves. And it's a big deal.
Yeah. So in research, this is a really fascinating thing that I came across this year, that when a lot of coaches, myself included, do values exercises. It's one of the things I offer for free on my website. Here's a core values exercise, go through it. I've had people say this literally turned my burnout around. It's, you know, it's a simple thing. It's free. It's available. Do it, use it, whatever. And yet, research is pretty clear on the fact that the most you're ever going to match your own idealized set of values is about 80%. The most. The most common is about 60%. So if you're acting in alignment with your values 70% of the time, you're like better than average.
Yeah.
So there's no room for perfection in that. There's
none.
The research blatantly shows that it's like some, and sometimes I talk about this with people a lot. If you have a values list, or which is a set of commitments to you, and you have an element, something that you'd like to do, something you've been asked to do, and it doesn't align with your values, but you still have another reason that it's important for you to do this thing, it's okay for you to sacrifice some of those values to do that thing. As long as you're doing that intentionally, you know why it's happening, and you're willing, my rule is, my own personal rule, is you're willing to pay yourself back in some way.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's so good. Because life is life. You know, there is no 100%. There is no perfect. And holding ourselves to unrealistic, unreasonable standards, and then beating ourselves up when we don't meet the unrealistic expectation we set for ourselves. That's just like, if you think about it logically, there's nothing healthy about that. one of the confidence builders is giving yourself grace. Mm. So
Fried fans will recognize that statement. We say that a lot around here.
I love that.
Give yourself grace. Nicole, I'm psyched for your book to come out. I'm so glad that we could do this at a time that supports getting it out into the world. So Fried fans, now is your time to go snag Nicole's book. Do it now, do it now, do it now, do it now. And then what I want you to do after that, because this is an amazing way to support authors, is if you buy the book on Amazon, go back onto Amazon after you read it, and leave a review, because once you get to 100 reviews on Amazon, that's when the world says, oh, this book matters. And then it sends it to other people. So if you do get this book and you love this book because you loved this conversation the way that I did, then taking that extra step would be super helpful long term for our new friend Nicole. Nicole, where should people find you? Or should they just go straight to the book right now and then they can find you after?
Well, what you just said, I mean, you have no idea how helpful that is. So thank you, Kate, for
saying that. I do have an idea.
Yeah, of course you do. That's right. Yes. If you want to go to Amazon and get Validation is for Parking, that's great. If you want to find me, NicoleKhalil.com is my website. You can find the book on there too. But that's where you'll just find everything.
NicoleKhalil.com. Will be, as per usual, my fried family, in the show notes for you so that your burnt out brain does not have to think or consider a goddamn thing today. Give yourself grace. Keep yourself whole. And remember that perfection isn't everything. Until next time.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.